Hey everybody, the show's about to begin, but before we get started, here are some words from our newest sponsors.
No matter what you do in the bathroom to get ready, Dollar Shave Club has everything you need to look, feel, and smell your best. They have amazing shower stuff, hair styling products, toothbrushes, and toothpaste, and of course, razors and shave supplies.
I use these products every day, George. The Amber and Lavender Body Wash is how I start my morning off. I get my body all nice and smooth, and then I switch over to the Big Cloud Good Shake Hand Cream. I love that stuff. But that's how I get ready. You're not me. You have to have your own way to get ready. You might shave your whole body to get ready for a bike race. Dollar Shave Club's Executive Razor and Shave Butter can help with that. You might do your hair to get ready for a soccer match. Boogies by Dollar Shave Club can help with that. It can get your style on point. The thing is, no matter what you do to get ready, Dollar Shave Club has everything you need.
And right now, you can get ready with an amazing deal on any one of their starter sets. I recommend the Daily Essentials starter set because I love Amber Lavender Body Cleanser. That's right. I love it. But you can't go wrong with any of them. Head over to thedollarshaveclub.com/junkie to pick up your own DSC starter set for just $5. After your starter set, products ship at a regular price. And make sure you check out their new video, too. That's dollarshaveclub.com/junkie, dollarshaveclub.com/junkie.
This is your captain speaking. We are making our descent into Las Vegas McCarran Airport. On behalf of our crew, we'd like to thank you for flying MMA Junkie Airlines. Now please fasten your seatbelts and put your tray tables in your upright position because the descent is going to be a little bit bumpy.
All right, Junkie Nation, it's time to roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goz. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. All night long, we rollin'!
The MMA Junkie Radio revolution is upon us.
Can you dig it?
There's no escape.
No escape.
Through the vast frontier of cyberspace and through a sea of stars in outer space.
One small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
We've solidified our combat communication stranglehold.
We are controlling transmission.
With the use of MMA Junkie Radio and SiriusXM satellite radio technology.
MMA Junkie Radio, commence transmission.
Live from MMA Junkie Radio HQ in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. Here are your hosts, Gorgeous George and Goz.
From the fight capital of the world, inside the beautiful Mandalay Bay Racing Sportsbook, you are listening to the MMA Junkie Radio Show, the only show that matters. I'm your host, Gorgeous George. With me, as always, is the devious and dastardly Goz, Ari's co-host. To my left, it's the fight analyst, Dan Tom. Back east, handling all the producing duties, excuse me, Danny Okers. Okers. He'll be producing, like I said. What's up, guys? Happy Monday.
Happy Monday.
What's going on?
Happy Monday.
The 22nd. Not much. You? What's the update?
It's feeling better, it's feeling better. But I'm stubborn, so like I'm wanting to use it more, which is probably a bad thing. So I'm just trying to keep remembering that I can't use it. But yeah, getting used to this this old slugger.
Is there an official date like November?
November 12th, which was UFC 205. I think in dates it's weird. Yeah, November 12th.
Oh, that's okay. Like 205. I was thinking. Wait a minute, that passed. Yeah, I get what you're saying.
Okay. Didn't he look like a defensive lineman?
Yeah,
or that big cast.
Yeah, and they use like a the chop to try and get back.
Oh, yeah.
By the,
actually, I take that back. He looks more like a bowler.
Like Jesus from Big Lebowski.
All right, guys, we have a fun show today. In 1 hour from now, we'll be talking to Steven Seiler, who got a win a few weeks ago at PFL 8. He got two wins and advanced to become one of the finalists, one of the first finalists for PFL. At PFL 11, PFL just wound up their playoffs and he'll be one of the two featherweights competing for that $1 million. His opponent will be Lance Palmer. Frank Mir will also join us. Frank Mir competed in jiu-jitsu this past weekend. Again, separating this from Quintet, because he also competed in that a few weeks ago. He competed against Forrest Griffin, a friend of his. And aside from that, they also have announced his next fight at Bellator versus Javier Ayala. It's technically Bellator 212. But we have been talking about the presentation they have with the USO salute to the troops. So I think we'll be referring to it more like that. But if you're keeping track, I believe it's Bellator 212. Lastly, Mark Montoya, head coach to fighters that we've been talking to lately. I thought, man, we got to get the coach back on. We've only had him on once, and it was while he had his run on The Ultimate Fighter. But this guy's doing something right because he's got a gym that's involved in some big fights, like Siler, for example. Siler really giving a lot of credit to Factory X. Most notably, we talked to Anthony Smith. He did a little bit of a training camp there before heading up to Nebraska to finish things off. And he'll be on his way to Moncton, Canada, for the upcoming UFC Fight Night. I believe we're up to 138 with those guys. That's Saturday. He and Smith and Volkan Ozdemir headline that card. So those are our three guests. Siler in about an hour. Mir 20 minutes later. Montoya 20 minutes after that. The first hour is wide open for us to talk about whatever you want. Especially mixed martial arts, but if you want to tail off into submission grappling or boxing, or I know wrestling had their world championships this past weekend as well. Of course, you know this is a show where we welcome football, baseball. Congrats, guys, on the Dodgers.
Thank you.
Making it to the World Series.
I feel like I had a part in it.
Had easy work there. Yeah, you had the rally stay going. And even though they were down 1-0, they came right back and put it on them, and the Brewers just could not recover.
Mm-hmm.
So, hey, look, they had a good season. I really haven't heard about the Brewers much in the playoffs in the last few years, so it's just good to see a fresh team get in there. But
they kind of already won just being there.
I think so, yeah. The Dodgers will face the Boston Red Sox, who won, you know, the other side, the American League, last week. So there you have it. The Lakers are 0-2, so the LeBron era is not off to a good start. I'm not tripping, though, because I know we're not a championship team. I just hope we become a team that plays better. In fact, it was a bad weekend for GG. The Niners are 1-6. USC lost at Utah. Man U feels like a loss because we're up 2-1 at Chelsea with like 2 minutes to go. And Chelsea put in a goal, which means we went home with a tie. And yeah, sure, we got a point, but it just felt like a loss to be that close. And then the only team that really won was the modern-day Monarchs of Santa Ana, California, who bounced back from losing a huge game to St. John Bosco a couple weeks ago. So a lot of people were saying, hey, we got a tough game coming up, but we steamrolled that team. So that's really my only positive.
Lakers do have a win. Rondo over Paul, right? Does that count?
Yeah. You know, I was going over this, and in that game, folks, we had some fights. So we could talk about it a little bit more. Did you see it, Dan?
Or is
this
all no, just a highlight. Yeah,
Danny Okers,
did
you
no,
see
no,
it?
No, I just watched it live. I know you're talking about that.
Okers? No, okay. So what happened here is, let me see if I got this straight. It wasn't Harden. Somebody drove down the lane for the Houston Rockets, and maybe it was Harden. Anyway, they ran into Brandon Ingram, who fouled him, and then Ingram just, he's a real quiet kid. He's only like 20 or 21 years old. For some reason, just gives that player a shove. Was it Harden?
He came. I don't know, but he came out of his way to do it.
Yeah, because
he was kind of an asshole.
I remember. I think Harden went up, but they didn't count the basket. So as he's pleading the case, I think Ingram's just like, shut up and just shoot your free throws. Like, because here's why it makes a little more sense to me. I watched Harden last night, and that guy for one is a phenomenal player. But when he goes up, guys, if he misses, he always looks at the ref to say, I got fouled. And a lot of hoopsters do it. I get it.
Kobe.
But, guy, yeah, Kobe was
LeBron
good. There are times when you just don't get fouled. You get swatted. Or someone just doesn't touch you and you missed. Oh, my gosh. The worst thing about it is when they do it and then everyone's running the other way and you're sitting there complaining. Of course, they get the easy basket. But, anyway, I watched and Harden does this a lot. But, nevertheless, I think Ingram was just like, dude, you fucking missed. And he just gave him a shove. And they kind of start to separate all that stuff. Now they're off camera. And apparently what goes down is Chris Paul and Rajon Rondo, who apparently have had a dislike for each other for many years, get face-to-face. Paul, what we see is he kind of like eye pokes him. I mean, he went straight eye-socket on him. Rajon Rondo turns away, hits him with a hook, a left mm-hmm. hook, catches him. And then by then, they do swing, but it doesn't look like no one else hits anybody.
I saw it again. I think he does hit him twice.
Maybe. But the first one was, you could see. Yeah, once you slowed it down, you go, that's a shot. Okay. They all swing away, and by then everybody's breaking it up. But Brandon Ingram came out of nowhere, gets a punch in. But what I can't see is if that punch landed or not. But he's still frustrated at that point. So now the controversy is the reason Chris Paul said he did that, and I've never known Chris Paul to be a thug, is because he said Rajon Rondo spit on him.
Mm. Now, he does have a reputation.
I've seen a bunch of videos. I've seen a bunch of videos, and I don't see spit leaving Rajon Rondo's mouth. Anything that's clearly defined as spit. People are, like, slowing it down, and you're seeing his lips. But it couldn't be anything than if I were to go, let's say I'm looking at you guys, and I go, pussy. Mm. Something from that pee sound. Just, I don't know. I mean, what is he, Sylvester the Cat? I mean, how bad could it have been? You know what I mean? He didn't, like, huck a loogie at him, and I didn't see any clear, defined spit. I think it was just air. Mm-hmm. Pussy, you know what I mean? Or I don't know. I'm just picking that word because it's the first one that came to mind, starting with the letter P, which, you know, can activate some form of saliva. but like, I mean, did they expect a statue to stand in front of them? They're kind of having words. Something's being exchanged. I don't know what, but that's what precipitated Chris Paul to do what he did. There was another video. It was funny because somebody was saying that his own teammate, Carmelo Anthony, had turned to him and said something, and that it could have been that. But I'm not so sold on it.
Oh, wow. Can you imagine?
So, anyway, I don't know that was enough to do the whole finger. I mean, maybe there's going to be yet another video that shows even more, but
I've seen the P word incite to some of the funniest fights ever for what it's worth. I don't know if that strengthens your argument. I know you're talking about more about the pronunciation and the popping and that it could make saliva come out.
Right.
As far as that goes, I didn't go back to look that close, but some of the funniest fights do come to mind now that, you know, there are a lot of things said, but as soon as that P word dropped for some reason, then, oh, that's it. And it just sparked off.
Yeah. Well, so they've already done the suspensions, and the worst one was Ingram. He got the worst of it.
All right.
Because I guess without the shove, the initial shove, and then coming back and throwing that clearly defined punch, which I don't think landed, we have nothing. And then second most, well, he got 4 games. Rondo got 3, and Paul got 2.
I thought it should have been more.
So Rondo clearly landed a punch, and the rest kind of missed. Paul poked his finger in the eye. So I guess they're saying the punch is worse than the eye. The Lakers have said they reviewed the tape, and they say they don't see no spit.
I know we got to move on from basketball, but just one last thing while we're tying combat into basketball. You know who really made you pay for trying to get those offensive fouls?
Scottie Pippen?
Well, Scottie paid, actually. He got chest pains, but he went in like a pro because, remember, Rodman wasn't getting the calls when they faced Utah Jazz. I'm talking about Karl Malone. Remember how he would throw the knees up? When he would just throw knees and elbows for rebounds, but even when he would go up for his layups or dunks, he would go knee first, like a flying knee, like Jose Aldo or Anderson Silva. And like, so you're taking that charge. You better commit. Like, you were going to earn that foul. He's going to make sure you earn.
Charles Oakley. Oakley was a beast too, dude.
Oh, Oakley. Yeah. Well,
that's why LeBron is so unstoppable, because he's such a big, thick dude as well. I mean, he lowers that shoulder, and it's like a running back. You know? What are you going to do? You either got to tackle him or take the hit.
I don't know.
But anyway, it was fun to break down. I was breaking it down. Dan Stupp chimed in a little bit. Joe from H-Town, a couple other fools. But what are you going to do? You know, they already said what's going to happen. It's going to cost them some money, and we move on. The NBA is pretty swift. NSAC, I believe, pretty soon, I think on the 24th, is going to talk a little bit about these temporary suspensions and with Khabib and Conor, you know, UFC 229. But the NBA, they don't play around. There you go. That's what it'll cost. We already looked. Look on our good friends, Hoops Hype. They kind of had a little breakdown of it.
You like Adam Silver?
I have no reason to dislike him. Mm. I had a good day betting NFL football.
Did you?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, I would have had a great day if that fool up there, Justin Tucker, had not decided to miss his first extra point in 10 years.
Oh, that cost you?
Well, I should clarify.
That's the worst way to lose.
I should clarify. All that would have done was put the game in OT. I still might have lost.
Oh, okay. He's still a fool.
But I was -2.5. Baltimore was the home team. They had the better D. and they would have had the momentum.
They had the better
one. I'm feeling like they would have covered. They would have won by a field goal. Thereby, I would have won my bet. But either way, I would have liked to have seen it. Tampa Bay's guy, he made a 59-yarder to win, and this guy couldn't make an extra point to tie. And the Cowboys are complaining because their guy missed a 52-yarder. But prior to that, they penalized them 5 yards for what looked to be a hokey call, honestly. Just the center makes this little shift with the ball before he hikes it.
Things happen.
That's what I say. And there's no guarantee. So what they're saying is because the ball hooked at the end, mm-hmm. that ball from 47, by the time it hooked, it would have been in. But it's a whole new play. You don't know how he kicks it. We don't know how the wind kicks up at that point. It may have very well have been good, but you can't judge it off that one single kick. And the bottom line is some guy had just made one from 7 yards further.
Don't put yourself in that position.
Yeah. I thought the Cowboys, they mismanaged the clock. They had 12 seconds left and a timeout. You can still run a pass and get it closer. Instead, they go, here, Ezekiel, put it where the kicker likes it. So he can kick a 47-yarder. 47-yarder is not a chip shot.
Mm-hmm.
So they were too conservative. But what do I care? I mean, they lost. I'm stoked. My team lost, so I don't have too much room to talk. I'll leave it at that, but that's that. PFL. PFL 10. It took place. So that wraps up the season. They are done with their regular season and the playoffs. But overall, I'm calling it their whole season. I mean, I guess they have their Super Bowl or their World Series or finals, whatever you want to call it, on December 31st. And that'll be that. That's the fights that will count for $1 million. But interesting how, you know, these fight cards have had a little bit of everything, from whether the 10-9 weighted first round of the quarterfinals, you know, became a tiebreaker, to them having to make they actually had to adjudicate in the Howard Lewis Taylor fight a decision there on the fly because of an illegal foul, and they hadn't gone a full two rounds. And so basically the I almost called them the World Series professional fighters, they actually had to award the fight to Lewis Taylor. And I think it was the right call. Even Howard conceded it was all over an illegal knee. And that illegal knee, when I first saw it, I thought, that's clearly illegal. And I thought that could be defined as an intentional foul. When we watched it again, I guess I left the opening for maybe Taylor was gunning for the chest and he didn't get it. And maybe that's what the referee saw. But, again, these things just happen in sports. What can you do? Luckily, they got out of there, and it looked like all parties were okay with the decision, I guess, if you want to call it that.
You could tell how just aware they were that there was so much on the line, because a lot of those fighters were just breaking down when they weren't getting those wins.
Mm-hmm.
And you think about what they were thinking in their heads, what they were going to do with that money. You never know what that could go to, right? Kids, a house, who knows? But it was pretty devastating. And Lewis Taylor almost lost out on everything just trying to walk out of the arena. And Ray Sefo had to stop him and tell him you could actually get disqualified for just walking out. So he had to bring him back. It was a pretty emotional night.
It goes back to UFC 229, and I know it's easy for us to say from behind the desk, but we've seen many athletes do this, and that's you have to find a way to come down and be composed and be a professional all the way through. Because of what you said, anything can and will happen, and you don't want to get disqualified on a technicality or just lose your mind or get fined or just give away all that hard-earned money that you know that you're always clamoring for, especially in our sport. And if you're a hothead, then hopefully your team can do a good job of reeling you in. In this case, Ray Sefo did a great job of containing his emotions, and you know, we all move on. So anyway, I'll give a little bit of results when we're going out to break of PFL 10, but that again concludes their season. Here's some news that I was happy to see. John Annick inked a 4-year extension with the UFC. So happy for him, because he was in a spot where they parted ways with Mike Goldberg, and Mike Goldberg, I think, had given the company 20 years. So even though Goldberg had a legion of haters, he was beloved by many. So to follow in the footsteps of one of the only guys ever really call the fights, that's difficult to do. That while there's this shadow looming of a dream broadcast team that Dana White is trying to put together, But yet he's not. He hasn't clarified who that may or may not be. Well, in comes John Anik, so you don't know if he's just the holding place for this dream team that's about to arrive, or if he was that, because it was never, he was never actually anointed that. Mm-hmm. But on his own, through hard work, through preparation and hustle, professionalism, class, he's become the man. So I'm very happy for him. He went out there, tackled the job, and did an excellent job. He's very deserving of it. And in my opinion, the UFC should be happy, and that should be their guy. I don't think there's another guy out there that could call the fights better than John Anik, with the exception of maybe a Mauro Ranallo, for example. And that's no disrespect to John.
Well, it's a job opening.
Look at the body of work that Ranallo has done. He's called a WrestleMania, a Mayweather-Pacquiao fight. He's called Combat Sports. You know, so
Pride,
and he's very beloved as well. Basically, John is they're both very talented. It's just Mauro's just a little bit more over the top with it. So, mm-hmm. you know, he would have his haters and his followers. Same thing with John. Everybody has them. But anyway, very very happy for John. Is what I want to say here.
He's a good guy, and you could see him get better as you. And it's not to say that he wasn't good when he started. But you could just see he had to deal with a lot of things that Goldberg didn't, you know, having to bring in the three-man booth. And I think Goldberg had to do that once or twice.
That is a pretty revolving door.
And it was right at towards the start of what he was doing. So it's like, how do you develop chemistry when every event is just like a new guy there that you have to deal with? So he's been through a lot. So for them to do that for him, he totally deserves that, man.
Yeah, he quietly does a lot of things too. You know, they always refer to Traffic Cop as far as like when to hit ads and like that on that basis. But even to another level, like if the guys are getting too much on this side or too much on that side or too much kind of out in space on something, he kind of brings it down to earth and makes sure he gets them back on track. We'll set up the analysis. Lob up the volleyball so the other guy can spike it down. You know, that's a sign of a good team player, and that's definitely John Anik.
And he's actually doing play-by-play and running into the octagon to do post-fight at times. Not always, but he'll do that, and he does very well with those questions, does a very good job of setting the guys up as well there for what they want next, and then he'll run right back and just, you know, keep it flowing, man. He's very, very talented, has an incredible vocabulary. Yeah, very smooth, no matter what types of pressures he's under or what kind of message he needs to deliver. So, again, couldn't be happier for that guy.
Yep. Just one last thing. You mentioned that, too, running into the octagon. I was just watching the UFC Pittsburgh card, and that was where Paul Felder made his commentary debut, and you had Dom Cruz as the other color commentator who, at that point, you know, arguably still Dom still does a great job, but still coming into his own. Definitely not the guy they're sending in for the post-fight interviews then or now. And then, of course, Paul Felder, that's his first one. So, you know, Anik's having to handle two different level of commentator who they're still trying to get their feet under him, though they're at different levels, while doing the double duty of having all right, and now I'm going to cue up some highlights. And you hear the mic drop real quick because he has to, you know, make the quick change over there. They already have his coat ready for him. And it's great. You just see him spinning so many plates, but maybe doesn't get all that credit. And he doesn't want it. He's a modest guy.
All this while being a sweaty bastard. I've heard that he just sweats profusely.
Wow.
And from someone who actually sweats profusely, I actually made sure to clarify. I go, are you sure? Do you know what sweating profusely is? Because I sweat profusely. And at the time, I was sweating profusely. Yeah. And the lady told me, worse than you. So I was like, wow. Because he's been in these old school gyms in Brazil where it wasn't a case of the AC's not working. Or the AC can only cool you off to a certain degree. There is no AC. And I can only imagine what I would be like in an environment like that. And he's doing it while holding the suit, having sweaty dudes put their arms around you or spill their blood. We had a great interview once with him about 2 years ago, and we were asking him about these suits. What do you do with them, you know? And are any of them just, you know, you can't recover, you know? Like, you just have to part ways with the suit, or can you actually take it to the dry cleaner and go, you got me, you know? And he says there has been a few that have qualified to just...
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's hardcore.
They're done, you know?
Do you remember Inside MMA when they try to put makeup on you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've declined it every
he's
time.
He's not like a You're not so much a body sweaty guy. You're more of a head sweaty guy, right?
Yeah.
That's why he'd be make a great La Barba, you know?
La Barba?
Yeah, he'd have that.
Yeah, I decline the makeup and...
Well, they still have to do something.
It would have ran down on my face like girls with the mascara, you know?
Give it a little sting at the end of a WrestleMania or something.
Something like that. So, all right. So, anyway, that's that. And one other thing I want to say here on the way out, and I think we'll save it. Yeah. Oh, I know. Jacare is stepping in. He's fighting Chris Weidman. I'm just not sure. When did Rockhold pull out? Was it last Friday? Or was it over the weekend?
Well, I think apparently it was a little bit earlier than we know.
Yeah.
But yeah, if I had to guess, it was probably somewhere around Tuesday or Wednesday when the UFC said we need someone.
Right. Yeah. So that's the latest for UFC 230, which is starting to really take a hit, man. That look, I mean, it's a nice plug, Jacare versus Weidman, but of course we lose Jacare versus Branch, and it would have been nice for Rockhold and Weidman to kind of have that rematch because the first time they fought, no excuses, because both guys were injured. But it just would have been hopefully nice to see with both of them
as a really
healthier.
Good fight.
Yeah. So, anyway, that's the latest there. All right, we're going to take this break. You're listening to MMA Junkie Radio on SiriusXM's Fight Nation Channel 93. Stay close. We'll be right back.
They were forged from the same ball sack, but act as though they've never met. They are the brothers Garcia, Gorgeous George, and Goes.
You know, for many people, Depeche Mode is the greatest band of all time.
Really?
It's in my top five. Yeah. They're in my top five.
I know. I think Richard Blake says that's his favorite. Yeah. For him to come out publicly and say it because he's the DJ and
they play
that's his channel first wave. So imagine what the others feel like. But I guess you got to have a favorite. And if you're honest about it, I mean, you know, the others have to get over it. Doesn't mean the rest suck. It just means that was his favorite. Don't miss the Boston Red Sox take on the Los Angeles Dodgers in the 2018 World Series. Hear every pitch, expert opinions, and analysis on your home for the best coverage of the Fall Class, MLB Network Radio, Sirius 209, XM89, and streaming on your phone or at home on connected devices and speakers. Danny, where do you sit with Depeche Mode?
You guys actually made me like them a lot more than I did. Like, I didn't hate them at all, but through you guys picking a lot of their songs that I had never listened to before, I kind of started appreciating them a little bit more.
Do you have a personal favorite or anything? Or
I don't yet.
Yeah, that's a tough question.
Yeah.
I like Depeche Mode, but I wouldn't say they're in my top five or top ten. I like that kind of music. Probably I blame AFI because a lot of it, their interest, I ended up liking like the big Smiths and Morrissey fans.
Smiths,
so then I got
awesome
into that.
Too.
Then of course I liked then Depeche Mode, and then
they're playing Halloween, or Morrissey's playing Halloween in L.A.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Marcel from Houston just tagged me on Twitter. He says he's got some spit videos. You guys want to take a look real fast?
Oh,
spit video.
Here's the first one.
He's a Rockets fan, people.
I've seen this one already.
For people tuning in the show, basketball fight.
What could that possibly be? Nothing leaves there. There's no projectile.
I'll give him the benefit of the doubt there. Yeah, but it's not really it's not too much. Whatever that is, that could just be just him.
Okay, there's another one.
That was a sly jab.
There's the punches. Oh, he's saying Paul landed one. Yeah, it looks like it.
Did.
Maybe. But that, goddamn, it's so fast. Hard to see if
yeah, it's a good one.
It looks like it might be. I don't think it was as good as the other one, but it looks like there may have been something there. All right. So he's making his case for, hey, Paul landed one too, man. And then the last one is, oh, okay. He's saying here's another one. Gotcha. Okay. That right there,
it's
looks
a solid
pretty solid
punch
as well. So then my question is, two punches and the eye poke and he gets less?
That's a good point.
Right?
Because he instigated it, right?
You might as well just give him all five games, or I don't understand.
Brandon Ingram's out of his mind, though. He was already pissed, and he was just looking for a fight. Just see the way. I mean, it's not like they're not that good of boys, right? They just signed them.
Who? What?
Rondo and Ingram.
Oh yeah.
Like the way Ingram came, you could just tell it didn't really matter what was going on.
Yeah,
he just
was
wanted
just
a
mad
fight. He was pissed off.
He had snapped. Yeah. All right. we're going to do the Daily Bait in just a sec, but I want to finish this out so I get it all right. Abus Magomedov defeated Sabadou. Dan, help me out here. Is it C or Psy?
C.
C, okay. Abus Magomedov defeated Sabadou C in the middleweight semifinals. Remember, it was the finals of that particular night, but on paper it was the semifinals because the finals are at PFL 11 on December 31st. Unanimous decision across the board. He is one of your two finalists. Ray Cooper had defeated Henderson Fajeya and also avenged an earlier loss in his career when he defeated him in the first round. That one ended in a technical draw, but Taylor's the one that was chosen to advance. So Taylor will be facing Magomedov in New York for the middleweight finals. Facing Cooper will be Magomed Karamov, who defeated Bojan Belikovic. Wait, George, I saw Belikovic lose earlier in the night. He did. But Abubakar, right? Nurmagomedov could not continue, even though he advanced on the tiebreaker. Therefore, Bojan Velikovic advanced to meet Magomed Karamov, and he lost. So your finals there are Ray Cooper versus Magomed Karamov. Sure goes. Magomed Karamov defeated Bojan Velikovic. Velikovic had lost earlier to Abubakar Nurmagomedov, except Abubakar Nurmagomedov could not continue. Therefore, Bojan Belikovic stepped in to face Magomed Karamov, but Magomed Karamov defeated him.
Okay. That's what I thought. I was just double-checking.
Yeah, so there you have it. That's kind of how things played out. Those are your four finalists for welterweight and middleweight. And now that season is done. And I heard back from the junkies that attended the show, Erica and...
They had a good time.
Yeah, Erica and Lerone. By the way, did you see Lerone got a shout-out on John Howard's trunks? On the back it said Howard, so he gave Lerone a shout-out.
Oh, nice.
But
Erica ended up on their Instagram thing, you know, when you go to a concert and they post your stuff.
Oh, did they?
She had one up there. That
Very
was pretty
cool.
funny.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I'm glad they had a good time. So thanks to USA Today Sports for allowing us to give away a pair of tickets to share with our audience. Okay, now it's time for the Daily Debate. Here's the question for today. It's pretty interesting. It's something we had heard a few weeks, months ago, and we all just brushed it away because the fight hadn't happened yet. Conor McGregor had not returned after almost 2 years, and we felt like there was other fish to fry should he beat Khabib Nurmagomedov, which we all know he lost that fight. But now this fight is yet again maybe getting a resurgence of traction. And I guess it's enough to talk about. So here's the question, guys. If somehow Anderson Silva and Conor McGregor do manage to fight, how do you see the contest ending? Silva by decision, Silva by stoppage, McGregor by decision, McGregor by stoppage. Goes?
Silva by stoppage. If you go back to the first Nate Diaz fight, I think what gave Conor a lot of problems was just that distance and just Nate being able to hit him before he could actually get in. He doesn't really see that too much. I think Anderson Silva would be a nightmare in that regard. Mm-hmm. Actually, I could see that front kick landing right on his chin.
Mm, okay. Dan Tom.
Yeah, that would make sense. He did land that front kick against a fellow southpaw, Vitor Belfort. And, you know, I think Anderson does better against southpaws. More of his arsenal, with him being a southpaw himself, is actually opened up. And that's what he would get with Conor McGregor. And whereas McGregor, I mean, you'd have to think, okay, well, maybe a puncher's chance. But let's be honest. We're really, if we're being critical and honest, we're still trying to find out where his power lies at 155, much less two divisions up, even if this hypothetical takes place at a catch weight. So maybe on McGregor's best day, maybe he could survive to a decision. But you got to admit, guys, it's probably going to be a main event fight, which means five rounds. So, yeah, I vote Anderson Silva by inside the distance. Seems like the most likely line by a stretch for me.
Yeah, I guess it's a third. I'm with you guys. At some point, the other fellas are just too big, man. It's not to take anything away from Conor McGregor. Look, even when Nick Diaz fought Anderson Silva, when Nick Diaz fought Anderson Silva, Anderson Silva took a while to really get going or really do much. For one, there had been, those fears of coming back after such a vicious leg break. So I think he had that weighing on him. That's why he broke down and cried afterwards. But Nick Diaz was kind of cool all week, and then he was punking him in the middle of the fight. And so Anderson, I think he just messed with him. But you could tell when they did actually fight and engage. One guy was just superior to the other guy on the feet, and I think that's what's going to happen here. He's just a bigger dude. And Anderson doesn't really seem to age. Like, he is aging, but he's not one of those guys where you go, oh, my God, he's a shadow of himself. It's nothing like that. He still actually looks pretty good. I would have wanted a little bit more of a frequency of fights from Anderson Silva in these last few years, despite all of those suspensions that he's had to serve. I feel like there's been pockets of time that he still could have filled in. But maybe he really saved his money well. Maybe he's so well off that he doesn't need to do it other than to have fun. But you can tell he's pushing it because he sees something there, and that's the fact that he's just a bigger guy, a stronger guy, and he'd have a, I'd say, a fairly easy night. So put me down. Same one. Silva by stoppage. Unanimous across the board here. 44% of them agreed with us, but 38% said McGregor by stoppage. That wasn't too far behind.
Wow.
Then 10% said Silva by decision. 8% said McGregor by decision. 3,357 votes came in. Thank you all for participating. There's the Daily Debate for today, brought to you by the MMA Junkie Radio team. All right.
That's crazy to me.
The 38%?
Yeah. That's a lot of people. I could see 15 maybe is what I would have thought. 38%?
Right, because 38%, we'll call it 40, of 3,000. Not 3,357. I don't want to do the math. 40% of just 3,000 is 1,200 people. 1,200 people, guys, actually went, you know, I think McGregor would get him. But those are jackasses that don't know any better. They just want to hit a button of who they like or dislike. Because I'm telling you, if you do this deal, the gun to the head scenario, where if you don't get it right, you know they're going, man, give me Silva. I was just fooling about. Yeah. Maybe 10. Orlando and 9 others go, nope. McGregor to the end. But trust me, of 1,200, those numbers would skyrocket downward. I guess that's not even that doesn't make sense. Skyrocket downward.
He said,
skyrocket.
Ask him.
They just would just fall downward. There's no way.
When you said Orlando, I just heard the sound effect that the movies use when someone gets thrown under the bus. Because there's a sound effect for that, by the way, right? When someone goes under the tires, it's like, boom, right? That's what I just hear.
Yeah. You can probably get it from the movie Speed. I think they had one of those guys went down that way. Yeah. Come on, man. By stoppage? No way. Now, had Connor beaten Habib, I might give those guys a pass. Because then I'd be thinking, wow. In fact, did you guys see Owen Roddy's video? He kind of released the last version of, you know how he had his own vlog going?
Mm-hmm.
It was actually pretty entertaining. And so he released the final days and night, and then he gave his personal thoughts on the fight. He has some real interesting behind-the-scenes footage. In fact, going back to John Anik had wanted to clarify on his podcast, Anik and Florian, about things that had happened to Conor McGregor on the day of the fight. And what he didn't want was for people to think he was making excuses. So he went and clarified, and I listened to that episode. So the way he clarified was just by saying, look, I'm not saying the fight result changes. All I'm saying was behind the scenes, we had heard that Conor McGregor's locker room was like a nightclub. It was jam-packed. Like, how do you properly warm up or stay tuned when you have such a huge entourage? And Owen Roddy takes us behind the scenes, and when you see in the locker room what he's going through, it doesn't look like it's troubling him, but it does seem like to be a lot of bodies in there that don't need to be in there. And now I see what John Anik was talking about. It was packed. I mean, like, how do you get so many people in there? And then when they're getting ready to go, and you can hear the commission official say, 10, 9, you just see behind Conor McGregor, you know, it's usually the fighter. Mm-hmm. And in championship fights, you get the third corner man. Otherwise, it's two and the fighter.
Yep.
You get the third. Sometimes we'll see four, whatever. And what will happen is the manager or teammates will just trail off. They'll walk in but just trail off. Dana White allows that to happen. But in this case, he must have had about six or seven vloggers like MacLife, Owen Roddy, you know, his vlog. And literally, it turned into boxing, almost like Mayweather walking in. It's just the UFC does a good job of not showing you that. What? But if you want a good behind-the-scenes vlog,
check that out.
Owen Roddy, I think you guys will dig it.
Well, Anderson Silva, we were just talking about, not to wind back, but same thing.
He used to have a huge entourage.
You know,
yeah.
A certain point.
Do you remember that at Encore? Well, he'd come out and they'd all be wearing the same sweatsuit. Yeah.
Dude,
be
that
like
was
30
insane.
Or 40 of them. And then they would get together.
Ronaldo
and do a
was
prayer.
One of them, for crying out loud.
Steven Seagal was
young,
in it.
Young Khalil.
Check this out. John Orlando, I may be in the Twilight Zone, says he doesn't think Connor would beat Anderson Silva.
Oh, wow.
He says Silva's right too big. That fight will never happen.
I think it won't happen, but I don't know about saying never to it. I mean, it seems like anything's possible.
You think he's being sincere? He just doesn't want to eat another chip. Yeah. He learned his lesson?
He's still feeling the chip.
I think he understood. Well, he said he would do it against Habib. But I'll tell you what, guys.
100%. 100%.
I think it would be fair for all of us to at least give some credit to Conor McGregor in terms of, for many years we said he ran away from the wrestlers. He ran away from the grinders.
Right.
He ran away from the tough fights. And to come back and go, give me Habib, like no tune-up, no Nate Diaz part three, you know, easy money, get in the wing, just straight head on. I think not enough credit was given to him.
And not. Yeah.
And for also not getting steamrolled like we all thought he would be. He got steamrolled in round two. He got finished in round four. But there was some things he did to chip away at Habib, which is what happened to
moral victories.
GSP and Anderson. We all started watching different fighters that were doing different things that would make the outing tougher for the incumbent dominant champion until finally someone breaks through. That's why I had that little feeling of Cejudo. I thought, man, even though he ran it one time, he got finished so quickly that maybe we didn't see the best Cejudo. And Cejudo improved after losing to him and Benavidez back-to-back. And something was telling me you can only be at the top and be so great for so long, and these guys just come after you, you know. And gun to the head, I still would have taken DJ, but I just, you know, there wasn't one in my head, thankfully. And I just felt like because of that, I saw some odds. I felt like there was past the victory, and Cejudo thing worked out a little bit, but it just happens to all of them, you know. Mm-hmm. It really does, and I think Conor McGregor.
Except Floyd.
He showed a few things. I thought Barboza showed a few things. Yeah. You know what I mean? And that's what you want to do is just show a couple little holes that can maybe be exploited. Also got to give credit to Habib. We also said, oh, that guy just needs to get the fight to the ground. He stood with him for a whole round three. I thought he was looking amateur at times in doing so, but at the same time, he put him down in round two. Mm-hmm. You know, he stood for round three, and so credit to both. Both really, really, really got better, but I think Conor did take a lot of flack on that. Oh, we got to take one more break. All right, let's do that. You're listening to MMA Junkie Radio on Fight Nation Channel 93. Stay close. We'll be right back. Remember, we got interviews coming up with Frank Mir. We have Mark Montoya and Steven Seiler in the second hour.
They can drink Mentos-flavored Diet Coke without their stomachs giving a single fuck. They are Gorgeous George and Goes. And this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We have your chance to see a very special live performance by Rick Gervais and friends. One grand prize winner will receive a trip for two to New York to go along with two tickets to the show on November 8th. For official rules and to enter, go to SiriusXM.com/RickyGervais. Do that before October 31st. No additional purchases necessary. I like that song, Danny. Good job today.
That one was Goz, for sure.
Oh, sorry, Goz. Good job.
Damn it.
Oh,
I was taking a drink, and I was ready to take it to him, and then he just came clean.
Mm. Nice.
All right. Let's talk to Marco in Waco, Texas. What's up, Marco? How you doing?
Marco from Waco. ¿Qué pasa, dudes?
¿Qué pasó?
Hey, George, instead of skyrocketing up downward, what about skydiving downward?
Yes, I like it.
Okay, all right. So, the Jacare Wyman fight, I like it because it's a fresh matchup. We never seen that one before. I mean, disappointed with Rockhold not making it, being able to fucking make it, but that guy gets more injured than his friend Cain Velasquez, man. I mean, since the Strifer, he had a history of injuries, man, so whatever. And Ray Cooper III, holy shit, dude. For a 5'7" welterweight, dude, that dude pack a punch. He should be fighting like naturally a bantamweight at 5'7", and he's just laying waste to the people on the PFL, man. I'm rooting for the dude, and hopefully we'll see him soon in the UFC. Peace out, dudes.
See ya.
Yeah, Ray Cooper was so aggressive from just the get-go of that fight. He was coming out throwing bombs, and Jake actually had moments where you could say, all right, this might be Jake's moment now. And he just was. Ray Cooper's the truth, dude.
He fights to his style. I love that. I mean, usually, you know, we're so used to long guys having advantage from John Jones and so forth. It's just such a great prototype for grappling to striking. But that doesn't mean the short guy has any, you know, any worse for wear. It's kind of fighting to your body type, and he knows that. He knows that, okay, well, if I'm shorter, they're going to have to change a lot lower to change their level and take me down to avoid these strikes. That's going to bring them right into my uppercuts. It's going to bring them right into my power shots, and he gets in their face. He pressures to take reach out of the equation. He gets the fight into his zone, and as long as that sprawls and he keeps his hips in check, he's just a ticking time bomb for anybody he's facing.
And he makes you pay.
Yep.
But, okay, here we go. I don't mean to rain on his parade or anything,
right?
But were a few of his shots close to the back of the head?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
He's throwing them,
but the damage was done by.
Yeah, he's doing it so quick that I think the ref is even thinking, you know, that could be stop the fight. You know what I mean? Because you'd have to actually interject and stop the fight just to give him the warning, and you don't ever want to take away from that. But I guess I will always say I'm on my couch. The ref's standing over, but a couple of them you can just tell from where they're coming down, it looks like the fist is landing where it shouldn't, but he's doing it so quick, and he really, really does make you pay. Once he's got you, it's over.
Was it Eric Silva versus Ricardo Funch where we saw what happens when everybody complains about those back of the head shots when the guy is already kind of hurt and the end's already coming? And we saw what happens. Well, what do you want the ref to stop it? We've seen that outcome, Eric Silva versus Ricardo Funch, and everybody, even though everyone was an Eric Silva fan and he was on his way up, people were still upset with the call because, you know, well, yeah, of course they're upset because I think Eric Silva, is a draw or he lost by DQ or something weird like that. But anyways, it was one of those. It was a similar situation. But I will say about the Cooper stoppage, I know what you're talking about, and the left hands were kind of going to that back of the head region. But I will say in his defense, his right hand in the same action was more accurate than most guys, you know, because what was it? Jake Shields was kind of in that turtle position where we see, and he shells up, right? And if you look where his right hand's going, like, it's some of the more accurate shots as far as, like, going right around at the top of the head area here, and then he goes right to the armpit and undercuts him right to the chin there. Like, they were super accurate shots, so he was trying to place it. I just think that the ref was giving him a pass because, you know, like, I had it taught to me and would teach the same thing. Like, dive your head in for a single leg. It's one of the most safest spots in a fight. Even if you can't successfully re-wrestle the guy down when you're burying your head into a guy, you know, only your back of your head's exposed, which is illegal. It gives them less of a shot. It doesn't mean they can't blast you, but, you know, it's what it is.
When you were going to rain on his parade, I thought you were going to talk about if he's that successful training with just his brothers in the garage.
Oh, jeez, yeah.
Can you imagine if he put this guy in a camp with other fighters, how much better he's going to get?
Yeah.
He's 17-5 now overall. He's won 2 in a row, twice on one night, obviously, all in the first round, all stoppages. Yeah, I like this guy, man. But I don't know if he's 5'7". Like, Jake, I've stood next to him, and he's 5'11". And the other day when they stood, I didn't see that much of a disparity. I looked it up, and I see 5'9 for him, which I think GSP was about 5'10".
What are you?
But he's jacked, Cooper.
Yeah, he is.
He's a thick guy. Yeah. I'm about 5'10", 5'11", depending on...
The 5'9 welterweight
has
been a solid size. It's been a solid size. We like to think of it as small, but from the classic guys like Matt Hughes, and then we have Thiago Alves a little later, and then
we have our
champion now, Tyron Woodley.
Yeah,
Matt Hughes looked like Thiago Alves' skeleton when they fought. Thiago was jacked.
Yeah. Oh, man. 95. You see 95 Bedlam. Or 85.
We are going to have... Okay, we have the top of the hour break coming up, so... Let me just tell you about a few things here. I really love what the guys did. Anson Inoue gave his thoughts on the UFC 229 brawl.
Looks yeah.
Like it did well. The story did well there. So check it out. Remember last week we also were able to catch up. Shout out to Kenny and John. They were out there at the UFC PI, and they caught up with both Cormier and Derek Lewis. So if you want to check out the videos, you can always go to our YouTube page, youtube.com/MMAJunkieVideo. And, of course, on our front page, you can see the links to our social media, or just follow the recaps that are there. Sometimes the writers will pick certain things from the interviews. Also, want to give a shout out to FFC. FFC 32 was this past Friday. I got a chance to check it out over there at the Fight Dome, at the Rio Hotel. It is really, really cool. It looks like going forward, they may actually, rather than separate boxing, kickboxing, and MMA, have hybrid cards. We'll wait to see if that's going to be a final product. It's just some of the rumblings I heard behind the scenes. Orsad Zofko on the team, George Elias, Ditch Duran, man, they've done a really, really great job of production. Production is okay. their thing, man. The lighting, the video, it looks great in there. And they were selling some tickets. People were there. So hopefully that thing picks up. Remember, their goal is not to sell 20,000 seats. It's 700 in the Fight Dome. So if you can get your ass in there, go. You'll really, really like it. I got to see Paige Van Zandt's husband win, Austin Vanderford.
Yep.
And he was pretty violent, man. 6-0. I tip my hat to that guy. He looked really, really good. All right, top of the hour break. It's a quick one. We'll be back in about 30 to 45 seconds. No matter what you do in the bathroom to get ready, Dollar Shave Club has everything you need to look, feel, and smell your best. They have amazing shower stuff, hair styling products, toothbrushes, and toothpaste, and of course, razors and shave supplies.
I use these products every day, George. The Amber and Lavender Body Wash is how I start my morning off. I get my body all nice and smooth, and then I switch over to the Big Cloud Good Shake Hand Cream. I love that stuff. But that's how I get ready. You're not me. You have to have your own way to get ready. You might shave your whole body to get ready for a bike race. Dollar Shave Club's Executive Razor and Shave Butter can help with that. You might do your hair to get ready for a soccer match. Boogies by Dollar Shave Club can help with that. It can get your style on point. The thing is, no matter what you do to get ready, Dollar Shave Club has everything you need.
And right now, you can get ready with an amazing deal on any one of their starter sets. I recommend the Daily Essentials starter set because I love Amber Lavender Body Cleanser. That's right. I love it. But you can't go wrong with any of them. Head over to the dollarshaveclub.com/junkie to pick up your own DSC starter set for just $5. After your starter set, products ship at a regular price. And make sure you check out their new video, too. That's dollarshaveclub.com/junkie, dollarshaveclub.com/junkie.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to MMA Junkie Radio. I want to take this time to let you know about our producer Danny's show. It's called Poppin' Off, and it airs live twice a week, Wednesdays, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, and Thursdays, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. You can find the show, if you missed the live show, you can find the recording on iTunes, Spotify, or YouTube the following day. Check it out. It's a lot of fun, and you get to see a little bit more of our producer Danny's personality. And my phone just rang in the background, so I'll turn that off because that sounds stupid. Fucking phone.
It's popping off.
In Chesapeake, Virginia, anyone over the age of 12 who's caught trick-or-treating could earn jail time.
We're going to fine people for dressing up on Halloween, which is a dope holiday. But yet, adults can dress up in crazy costumes and come spend a load of money, also known as Comic-Con, and we all love it.
Every single person at Comic-Con could have been fined or gone to jail.
If they walked through and somehow were given a piece of candy, then yeah,
there's something wrong.
Thank you.
Watch live on the FNTSY YouTube stream.
This is that song that girls go nuts over. If you're at like a club or something, they will end the conversation right then and there. That and Journey.
All right, here we go with the second hour of the MMA Junkie Radio Show. Dan, you were telling me something when I mentioned FFC. You said you had a homie fight?
Yeah, my buddy Corey Conway, I came up with a grappling team. He fought a lot in Tough Enough. Mm. I'm sure you guys probably called a couple of his fights. Guamanian kid. He fights at 135. I believe he's been fighting pro now. I'm so bad at catching up, but he was one of the dudes that was like a brother to me. And just like a young kid, always work hard, always in the gym, still in the gym. But I guess he didn't tell anybody. You know, he was good regardless, win or loss, at the FFC show. It was going to be his last fight. I believe he lost by unanimous decision, won the first round, and then got grinded out for the last two.
I remember that first fight, yeah.
And but Corey was just that's him, man. He's a real tough technical kid, and just love seeing someone like that, kind of someone you wouldn't suspect. You guys are talking about people you wouldn't suspect as fighters, like Hoyce, and I just wanted to give him a shout, Corey Conway. Thank you.
Yeah, I did see him. He did win that first round. He had a good little crowd there. You know, I could tell it was his family,
yeah,
and support. But the other kid was just, I think, bigger and stronger,
yeah,
for his weight class,
bigger kid.
And that's a little bit of what made the difference. But the kid never gave up, so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, big shout-out to Corey. And I saw Coach Dennis Davis in his corner.
Yep.
Also saw Julian Marquez. He was cornering as well.
Yeah,
but
he was
nice. Another of the corner. So, yeah, you still wind up running into a lot of people from the industry when you least expect to. All right, so we're a little late on this one, man. We always have Steven Seiler on, usually before his fights, sometimes after. But I was really, really stoked to see him there when they brought in all the finalists at PFL 10. These will be the finalists for PFL 11. You see Steven Seiler there. And you know that a lot of people were saying, well, Palmer Harrison have to be the one to, you know, the top two favorites to advance. And Steven Seiler wanted nothing to do with that. He went out there, did his thing throughout the season, then came back and won his two fights in one night at PFL 8. That is why he's one of the finalists. And he'll get to fight Lance Palmer at PFL 11 on December 31st, with the winner getting $1 million. He joins us now on the hotline. What's up, Steven? How you doing?
Hey, it's going good. How are you guys doing?
Not as good as you. You get the fight for $1 million in a little bit over 2 months. So really, really happy for you. You know, this has been an incredible season where you guys have had to fight frequently, but you've been able to do it. You've been able to stay healthy, unless you share otherwise. And two fights in one night, that's just something that most fighters won't get to do in their career, especially in this modern era. But the PFL put that format out there, and it was great to see a lot of the guys embrace it and succeed in it. And you were one of them.
Yeah, it was definitely a crazy night, especially fighting twice in one night. I mean, it was a different feeling than I thought I would expect. I thought I'd be less motivated the second fight and kind of more calm, but I was actually more excited for the second fight than I was the first fight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the tiebreaker was in effect in your first fight. I went to PFL 9, and I saw a few guys actually come back from that, being down in the first round and then come back and either get the finish or get a 10-8, thereby unevening the score. But overall, is your health good coming out of, you know, this whole summer of the regular season and now the playoffs?
Yeah, I'm feeling healthy. Just taking a little bit of a break now from training. I did have obviously a little bit of a head injury after the fight. So I took 2 weeks off. Maybe, 3 weeks off. I'll probably get back to training here next week, and then I'll head back to Colorado right after Halloween.
What was it like in between those two fights, by the way? What did you concentrate more on, cooling off, resting, or your actual warm-up for the second?
Honestly, I had no time to really even worry about any of that. I got back to the locker room. I maybe had a quick, I think I had like a banana or something, drank some liquid. Then we had, I think, 12 minutes from that time till the time I was starting to get warmed up for the next fight. So there really wasn't too much time between my first fight and my second fight. I was the last featherweight fight, so I had the least amount of time to get ready. So all I had to do was get food in me, some liquid, get to warm up.
Would you ever do that again? Would you ever want to do that again?
Yeah, if it's going to be put me in if that's what the PFL is doing it next year, and I love to do it again for another $1 million.
All right, but I mean the fight twice in one night. You like that part of it, or would you prefer single night of fights?
No, I definitely like to have the two fights in one night. Like I've said, I killed two birds with one stone. I only had to weigh in once. I got to fight twice and got to double the paycheck. So it was amazing doing that, two fights in one night.
You guys, you know, I'm going to continue to be nosy here. You guys got two show money checks, right? Like. You guys usually get, usually MMA fighters get show and win. How did they break it down for you guys for these rounds?
For me personally, I just had one big check. Mm-hmm. I did talk to Sean O'Connell while we were in Washington, D.C. together. He said he had like two or three separate checks. So I think it depends on the commission or the state you're in, what way they paid you. I just got one big check.
All right. And when you finally get back home, was the wife, she's got to be ecstatic. Remember, she's the one kind of holding things down. That's what you told us. It was a big gamble on her part, but she was very, very supportive. So you came through. I'm sure you came home to a happy family.
Well, she was actually out there with me in New Orleans. And then we actually took a family vacation straight to Florida. We spent another week out there. So then I probably came home for like 2-3 days before they had me fly out to Washington, D.C. So I haven't really had much home time. But she was definitely excited to see, you know, how this year's playing out. And, you know, all the gambles we took is working out for our best.
Which one of you two said first, "See, I told you"? Was she the one that believed that you could do it? Or were you the one that had to convince her that it was the right thing? You know, and what I mean is you having to peel away from the family a little bit and head over to Factory X like you did.
So far, you know, neither of us said that. And you know what? Our journey's not over yet. We still got to get to that million. See, I got to get past the tough guy in Lance. So we're not done until we get that million.
What'd you do in Florida, by the way?
We did. So first, my sister had a baby, baby Romy. She was like 10 days old when I got there. So I got to hang out with my new niece for a couple days. We went down to Orlando and hit Disney World for the day, which was cool. We were at the edge of the hurricane, so it rained like the first 3-4 hours we were there, and we got drenched, but still a good time. And then I went back and hung out with my family again the next couple days and finally came home.
I was just about to ask that because I was trying to do the timeline. You guys fought around, I think it was October 7th, and I was wondering if you had brushed up on that hurricane at all.
Yeah, we fought on the 5th. We head out. We actually had my aunt and uncle who was down where the hurricane hit really bad, and so they actually came up to Jacksonville where I was at and spent a few days up there with us, just kind of avoid it, which luckily their house didn't get hit. I mean, they had a power outage and things like that, but nothing too terrible. So we were on the safer end.
Good stuff. All right. Steven Seiler is our guest here on MMA Junkie Radio. He's coming off 2 wins at PFL 8. First, Nazarino Maligari. Technically, it was a draw, but he was awarded the win via the tiebreaker of the stronger first round. And then the second win was Alexander Almeida. He now faces Lance Palmer at PFL 11 on December 31st. All right, Dan, Tom, you go first. What do you have for Steven Seiler?
You know, Steven Seiler, low key, is one of my favorite resumes. When you look down it, you know, it's really deceiving. You know, Steven, you look at some of your early losses, you avenge those, and you can even just chalk those up to being young in your career. You lost to some quality guys later, but no shame there. And you've been on a really crazy run since, obviously. So it's been really fun to follow your career. But let me ask you, Steven, you officially hit 50 fights, so you probably are at more if you count amateur, unlisted, or pro exhibition. But was there any part of this crazy journey that I just did a rough run through of that you thought about maybe doing something else or focusing more on this or just, you know, for lack of a better word, kind of quitting and giving up? Did you ever have that moment?
Definitely early in my career, I had that quite a bit, especially because I didn't really plan on doing this. I more just got in for being fun. Like you guys know, I wasn't training my first 12 fights. I was more just doing it to be on TV, local TV, thought it would be something cool to do. And then when I was 5 or 7, it wasn't really going my best way. I had my mom and my brother both telling me, bro, just give it up. You're not good at it. It's just focus on work and not have to worry about getting hurt at all. And then definitely after once my UFC career was coming down, I was wondering, you know, how hungry am I? Do I really want to do this anymore? But then after a week after that La Hot fight, you know, I realized, you know, I'm not done yet. I still have plenty more in the tank.
Well, I'm sorry. One more follow-up. So it was the La Hot fight that turned it around?
It was after that. I mean, that was my last UFC fight, and just the way I went into that fight, I just wasn't hungry. I became very relaxed and just didn't really care to be there in that fight. I was just, something was just not there. And I think, I don't know if it was just camp troubles or just really what, but just the hunger to fight wasn't there. So I was like, do I really even care to fight anymore? Is it really still in me? So it's, you know, at that point in time, you know, I talked to Coach Hackman even. I'm like, I don't know if I want to do this. Maybe I should retire. But then I think I took a couple weeks off and, you know, I got time with Titan. And, you know, all of a sudden I had it back in me. I was hungry again.
Steven, let's go back to the 5 and 7 chat. You said that was your mom and your brother?
Yeah, mostly because my dad really was, he was in Oregon, I think, at the time. You know, I talked to him, but he wanted to do whatever I want to do anyways. He could care less what I'm doing. But my mom was still living in Utah, and she had to deal with it. My brother, he's going to all my fights, seeing me not really do too well, get beat up sometimes, and come back bloodied up. So they were the two major parts of my early MMA career where they saw I wasn't doing so well, so they definitely wanted me to hang it up.
What did you think about that chat? Was that a tough chat to have? Did you consider what they were saying and come close to taking their advice? Or did you, you know, push back and allow yourself that second chance?
I mean, I wasn't really too invested into the sport anyway. So, I mean, I didn't really take it too hard. but also I am a competitor. I'm a competitor, so I just wanted to prove them wrong and knowing that I could be good. And like I said, after that 12th fight, that's when I finally stepped foot into the gym, started training. And, you know, everything went great from there. I won my next 10 until I fought Chad Mendez. So, you know, I think I just needed a little bit more knowledge of what to do in there. I just kept on, like, that one thing I took to the ground, I had no idea what to do. So I just kept getting beat up that way. So I just, that's all it took was a little bit of training, and I figured out how to do really well in the sport.
Yeah, you went on a 13-1 run, if you include the Mendez fight, 18-3 run, if you include Elkins and Cole Escovedo.
Yeah.
A lot of your career has been all about these streaks, and right now you haven't lost, you know, since November of 2017. So 2018 has been a great year for you, and now look at you in position to win a million. That's amazing, man. That's quite a turnaround. All right. Goes, what do you have for Steven Seiler?
Steven, it seems like you're pretty much a lock win, lose, or draw for season two. And that being said, if you go back and you look at everything you endured this year, is there much that you would change going into the next year?
No, not really at all, actually. I think I'm going to be doing the same thing, you know, as of this year, that I'm going to be doing next year. I'm going to come back. I'm going to be out here at Factory or go back out to Factory probably a little bit sooner. But I'm actually well adjusted there. So now I think I'm going to be better prepared to begin the season. My first fight with the PFL didn't go, even though I won, it wasn't going the best. And so I think, and I've gotten better ever since, every fight since then. So I think I'm going to just continue getting better every day, working with great coaches and great teammates. And I think this next year could even be better than this year.
You know, going back to now, you know, your opponent, Lance Palmer, if you go back and you watch the first fight, do you believe that he's going to try and change much from what he did? Because he was successful in that fight.
No, there's no reason for him to change anything. And that's the kind of wrestler fighter he is. He's a really good wrestler, and we understand that. And so it's just my job to change my tactics and, you know, try to make sure, you know, I'm able to create scrambles or do something to finish Lance.
All right, my man. Well, I can't wait. I hope you have a great camp for Lance Palmer. And, you know, the preparations go well and you stay healthy. I can't wait to see you guys throw down. That's a good final there for the PFL. So congrats. Thanks for always kind of opening up about your career. It certainly, you know, had its ups, it's had its downs. But right now it's an incredible up, and you deserve it because, you know, you got that hunger back, like you said, and you made some sacrifices. So that's really, really commendable. Thank you very much, Stephen, for giving us some time here on the show today, and we'll talk to you on Fight Week.
Perfect, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, take care. All right, big shout-out to the Dominance team for making that one happen. Steven Seiler versus Lance Palmer, PFL 11. Why don't we take this break, and then that way we can kind of get it out of the way, and that way we can go from one interview to the next. You're listening to MMA Junkie Radio on Fight Nation Channel 93. Stay close. We'll be right back with Frank Mir.
King Kong has a lot of shit on them. Like a lot. Especially Goes. Here, Gorgeous George and Goes.
Okay, here we go. Today is Fantasy Football Reaction Monday on Fantasy Sports Radio. Here a complete wrap-up of the week in fantasy football, and call in to talk about your favorite team, whether you want to brag about a victory or need a shoulder to cry on in defeat. And if your game is still undecided, here a preview of tonight's Monday Night Football matchup between the Giants and the Falcons. From the fantasy football perspective, live fantasy football, live fantasy football reaction right now on Fantasy Sports Radio,
also
Sirius
live
210, XM87, and streaming on your phone or at home on connected devices and speakers. When I read it, I thought they were headed down the path of live fantasy football if you're a hardcore.
You're not doing it right if you're not living.
When I got there, I go, oh, it's live. I got to go back. Yeah. All right. Frank Mir. So, Frank Mir, we haven't received the call yet, and we're hoping to soon. And we that will be our next interview. Sorry, I just got thrown off here a little bit. Okay. Ray Cooper. I wasn't sure if I said this during the commercial or not, but I looked it up in two different spots, and they show him as 5'9", which is a little bit closer to most acceptable welterweight come in at. I mean, there's been successful weight. I think Hughes was 5'9". I think GSP was 5'10". And We talked a little bit about this, but look, there is an era of the tall, lankier, lightweights like James Vick, who's 6'3", and then, you know, all the ones that.
How long is that going to last, though?
No, all the big cats at welterweight as well. Ben Saunders, I saw him the other day.
Corey Hill was pretty tall.
In Long Beach, he's about 6'3", too.
I always think of that.
So there's some really, really big dudes out there.
Oh, I know.
That was the most violent card ever, guys, by the way. That troops card. That was Yoshida getting knocked out by Josh Koscheck twice standing. That was Brandon Wolf getting tie clenched knee to death by Ben Saunders where there was lumps on his head. That was
Kennedy headline?
Steve Cantwell got his arm broken. Ooh. Corey Hill got his shin snapped. Like, I was afraid. I'm like, I don't want to watch any more fights on this card. I've been watching live. I'm like, what's gonna happen? This is UFC Kumite. That was a brutal card.
I remember that one, man. I think it was Fort Campbell, Kentucky.
That's right.
All right, let's talk to Showtime in Tennessee. What's up, Showtime? It's yo time.
Hey, is there a lot of noise in my background? I'm outside. I don't know if you can tell.
No, we can't hear a squat.
It's actually one of the best, clearest calls you've ever had.
Yeah.
Cool.
Peace.
Okay. Now that we've established that, let's start the call. What's that?
I said I actually enjoyed the PFL card Saturday night, and it was very entertaining, man. And just to see the raw emotion, man, when you got that much money on the line with a lot of those guys, man, was basically amazing, man.
Mm-hmm. Hey, tell me if this makes sense to you guys. I almost felt like I had $1 million on the line every fight. Because they were so emotional at the end that it was just like, oh, man.
It was the stakes.
It was gut-wrenching.
It was the stakes, which is why, I don't know, Showtime, if you were having to do a double screen action on the Saturday before when they had PFL and Bellator at the same time, and there was no knock on Bellator. Bellator's been delivering, but I found myself watching PFL more, to be honest, because of the stakes. Is that kind of what you're hitting on, or do you feel me there?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you this. I actually was watching PFL over football. I mean, I literally had my big TV on the PFL, and I was, you know, I had my computers up, so I was checking on the football games, you know, via computer, man. But I mean, it was actually a nice night, man, and kind of funny. I was watching the Lewis Taylor fight, and then he was basically sitting there waiting in suspense on what was going to happen, man. And that was like a real, real tense moment, you know, for a minute. I'm like, okay, damn, he was winning this fight. I'm hoping that he don't get suspended for this knee. You know, so I'm like, shit, just qualified, I mean. So, I mean, that was a tense moment, man. Check this out, man. The kid that stopped, what's the guy name? Belichnovic, is that how you pronounce his name? Serbian Steel, that's what he went by. Hey,
yeah,
man, that kid that beat him, man, is UFC caliber, man. Just think about it. I saw Serbian Steel fighting the UFC and nobody ever stopped him, and this kid basically just dominant, went there and wiped them off the map. I mean, it's amazing how many of those daggers he is, man, are over there with PFL, man. There's a lot of talent in that area, man.
All right, so here comes George raining on the parade a little bit. And you guys, please feel free to interject at any moment.
I have some raindrops, too.
All right, so Showtime, there's no denying that there was some great moments during PFL 10. And the $1 million prize obviously helps in that regard and everything. But my thing is, I don't know a lot of these fighters, and a lot of these fighters don't make themselves known via through social media or any form of interviews that they've done.
A nickname
throughout their run, right? So to me, there are times where, especially with the middleweights, where I was watching fighters that, hey, yeah, like Showtime said, that guy looks pretty good. Oh, that's right. He fought so-and-so. Okay, I get it. Yeah, of course he's pretty good. He's not just lucky or whatever. But I don't know much about these guys. And I think one thing I would like the PFL to do is not have as many of them. I think the reason PFL 9 was pretty fun was like – and it's nothing against Dagestani fighters or fighters that I don't know as well. I'll give you an example. I've seen a lot of Rashid Magomedov fights. And I've seen Will Brooks fight. In fact, I've seen them both fight live. So, when they fought, I didn't care where they were from or anything like that. What I cared was I've seen them fight. I know how good they are. That, therefore, I was vested into the fight. Mm-hmm. But when there's guys that have great records but I just haven't seen as much of, I don't mind one or two carefully placed throughout the card, but when they dominate a division, you're like, ah, you know? And so I think what they should do is limit that a little bit per each division, how many unknown fighters you have, because it's just going to be tough to really, really get excited about them, you know, until I guess they either hold up a check or they beat a well-known name, which kind of puts them over or something like that. So that would be the only complaint I had, was that there was just stretches of time where I was like, who's this guy again? You know, whatever. And therefore, some of those guys, I guess, have to do a little bit of extra work on their own to make themselves a little bit more relevant. Even Abubakar Nurmagomedov, I could even just say, oh, yeah, he was in the middle of that melee at UFC 229. That was enough for me. Rashid, he's fought in the UFC before plenty of times and done well. A lot of them kind of already had some sort of an in. But a few of them were like, okay, you know, have at it, guy. You know what I mean?
Start with a nickname.
And it's no big deal as long as they're fighting a guy that I'm familiar with. But if there's two unfamiliar names fighting, and then the next two aren't familiar, and then those two meet in the finals, well, you just had a little bit of a run where I didn't get as excited about.
Dagestani fighters, to me, I enjoy watching them. I think they're fun. I think Dan's mentioned this before on the show. King Mo brought this up a long time ago about how big that stable can be out there. And they do well. And I'm going to go back to something Showtime said, was some of them are UFC caliber, but the problem is that's not the style that the UFC likes to promote. So I actually think they're in the right place. It's just, you're right, sometimes there's just too many of them, and it's hard to tell who's who or remember going week to week. It is tough, but overall I thought the product was – I'm very, very surprised with the overall product of PFL this year. I thought a lot of their cards were great. I thought a lot of their fights were fun, and I really thought that at some point the system they had would come back and bite them in the ass, and they really haven't had as many moments as you would think. I think everything's gone pretty well for them.
Well, that was my only thing. Other than that, I really enjoyed their regular season and playoff, but I would just hope, again, they do a little bit more spacing. I know that when it came down to 1 versus 8, they can't control that, you know, but as far as, like, maybe limiting that exposure, that'd be best for me. Thank you, Showtime, for the call. Yeah. That was great stuff from you, man. As always,
I've often said that, you know, a lot of people love the heyday of Pride versus UFC, and it was great. But the one thing you didn't get was sometimes you'd have matchups that you just wanted and you would never see them.
Yeah.
So I'd always said, like, oh, I don't want a third group to come, because now you got Bellator, UFC, that's going to start to happen again. But PFL's kind of come in and given you that niche where it is actually fun to have a third organization. Like you were saying, having two TVs on the same time watching fights, and one of them doesn't say UFC on them and you're still entertained, that's pretty cool.
That is.
Now, I also want to emphasize again, nothing against certain countries or anything like that. I also went through that a little bit with Darren Till. Darren Till, same thing. He was fighting different fighters.
Darren Till.
He was fighting different fighters that we just hadn't heard as much of. But luckily, he had some charisma. He spoke in English, so that helped. But again, for many of the hardcores, they didn't get over on Darren Till until he beat Cowboy in Poland. So to them, he was still an unknown, and he can speak English. Then he gets over on someone, and you're like, oh, shit, this guy's for fucking real.
Yeah.
He's not just, you know, facing certain fighters because their matchup, you know, their favorable matchups for him from Brazil or from Europe or from wherever. He's actually pretty good. And then, of course, he beats Stephen Thompson, and then, boom, he's right in the right spot. That's kind of what I'm looking for.
I don't hate you for that.
But
makes sense.
As long as they just keep improving, I want to see those 72 names.
But
season two, it's going to be crazy because I think there's going to be some surprises.
Yeah, I'm
in
excited.
In fact, I wish I could tell you guys. I'll just tell you. I'll write it down.
Okay.
Sorry, audience. But this is a name that was close to fighting in PFL 1.
About that one.
And I don't know that it was ever public. So you saw that?
Yeah.
So can you imagine if we get those types of splashes where you're just like, damn, no, for sure, for real? Like, whoa, you know what I mean? Like, that type of a reaction, if they can do one of those types of names in each division, two, and then like a former champ of another organization along with their Ray Coopers and all the other guys, the new names that they're molding, you know what I mean? I'm telling you, the excitement level will raise even more. But there's something to be said for some of these names that have put in their time and are famous.
That's they have a lot of pressure on them for season two, just because you can't pay out that much money and expect to do it again a second season without some sort of growth in your company.
Right.
They're really going to
have to. The
money's
got to come from television or sponsorship.
That's a lot of money,
but television,
dude,
is probably the big one, because you can go back to the venture capitalist people. But yeah, you're right. You got to produce results, and the UFC. Everybody keeps saying, "Hey, PFL, $10 million. Where are they getting it? You know, how can they keep it up?" Hey, the Fertittas went $54 million deep before that bad boy turned around, and it took. Let me see, it was 2005. So that was about almost 5 years of their existence. And PFL, if you just want to separate PFL from WSOF, is only 1 year in, because it is a new group. That's why there's a new name. So, to be fair, there has to be a little bit of time. That's why Bellator kind of started to take a little bit of heat, not just for the Bjorn era, but now the Scott Coker era, because the Scott Coker, I think, started its fourth year. So it's like, wait a minute, where are those ratings at? You know, but they
do it in college football, right?
They keep writing those checks, so I don't know. I would hope that those people that write the checks are pretty damn smart. Otherwise, why would they keep these businesses afloat? All us as fans can do is connect the dots and go, "Yeah, this is a disappointing number in television or in pay-per-views or whatever." You know, and in the past, shows that have produced those types of numbers haven't lasted as long. That's what we say.
In college football and college basketball, when you get a new coach and they still have some of the old players, by that third year is when I think you can really start to criticize them and say, look, now you've got your freshmen have already, they're now going to become juniors. At this point now, I think you can be giving some sort of result. So for people to come at Scott Coker in year three, even year four, I think now he does feel that pressure. Yeah, because now he's got a lot of his own signing guys, right? Like, if you look back, I mean, there's a few here and there, obviously the Pitbull brothers, right? Guys that were there before, Chandler is a big name that he was able to keep and implement, but he's also brought in a lot of his guys. So I think it's a fair criticism at this point.
Yeah.
Hopefully they take your guys' advice, by the way, one last thing about the checks, because like you guys say, once that pictures of the guys getting paid comes out, that's going to convert everybody else. I think they'd overachieved already how much they've converted from fighters to fans, I'd argue, but you guys are right. It's going to come down to those check pictures.
I hope so. All right. Let's take this break. It's a swing and a miss with Frank Mir, but we'll have time. You know, if we're not able to land him today, we will land him some other time. I think him grappling with Forrest was pretty relevant, and then the other thing is the Javier Yella signing. I know him
and Quintet.
Team Mir are pretty stoked about that.
A lot to talk to him.
Yeah, exactly. So Mark Montoya will be our next guest. We'll talk to him when we come back after this break.
Let's see. Up, up, down, down, left, right, B-A, start. You told me that code would get rid of them. Yeah, well, they're still here. Okay, but now they know I tried to kill them. Hold on, Mom. Here George and goes.
We have your chance to see a very live performance, a very special live performance by Ricky Gervais and friends. One grand prize winner will receive a trip for two to New York, along with two tickets to the show on November 8th. For official rules and to enter, go to SiriusXM.com/Ricky Gervais. Do that before October 31st. No additional purchases necessary. The spelling of Gervais is G-E-R-V-A-I-S. Well, in baseball, 1-for-3 is not a bad day.
Yeah.
And that's where we are right now, guys, because Coach Mark Montoya has not answered either. I think we're going to reroute Frank Mir to another show this week, or maybe tomorrow, or I don't know. Goes, you're working on that. So we'll see what we can do there. I asked Danny if he could call the coach, but yesterday when the coach and I were talking about it, he was saying he has a workout around this time, but he would slip out a little early, so he might just be tied up with that. Though I did see that he retweeted it, so he retweeted our preview. All right. No harm, no foul. We're a show that broadcasts 5 times per week, so trust me, we're able to scoop a lot of these guys and gals up towards the later part of the week, no problem. It's not something we stress over.
Chipotle bet to keep it interesting. I got faith in the coach. I'll back the coach for some Chipotle. If anyone wants to oppose me,
I was trying to figure out what to eat today too. I was gonna make some raviolis.
So what's the bet? Like that he just calls?
If he doesn't call, if he doesn't call, then I owe you guys Chipotle. If he does, then
that's a tough one. I probably would have done it if I hadn't seen this retweet. The retweet tells me that he saw it at some point. So he's just maybe like a minute or two late.
Fair enough, fair enough.
But otherwise, it'd be like, chocale.
Okay.
It doesn't take much to make you bad at Chipotle.
I know. Yeah. You know what chocale means?
No.
Chocar is a crash.
Okay.
So chocale means let's collide hands to shake. Like bring it here, like that type of thing. So a lot of times they'll go chocale. Like that. But like it kind of sounds like chocolate.
I always thought that was for fist bumps.
No, because I've heard this for 40, 50 years, and the fist bump's, what, 20 years old maybe?
South American?
Peru. I used to hear this
slang.
Peru.
Okay, yeah. Cool. Awesome.
Chocale, like that.
Oh, nice. I like
and,
that.
That
I
just like meant, that. Like, put it there, you know, like one of those. Mm. All right, then. So,
I'm not very good at those.
Hawaiians just go down.
I dodged the bullet because the coach just said, try again, please. So, Danny, if you can call him, that'd be great.
Why? There's a Chipotle on the Strip. But why have they not signed that deal with hotels yet? Is it because those just annihilate food courts?
Imagine how that would do at Mandalay Bay. With all the convention people we have, I think it'd be a killing.
You know, McDonald's is a big deal, right, when they left? If you notice, there's not one at Luxor anymore. There's not one at MGM. They had, like, a deal with MGM.
Why'd they do that?
I don't know. They'd probably just rent or something, right?
Wow. I don't know. It just seems like a home run to be in a hotel.
One last thing. I heard an insane fact that Subway's have almost as much of Starbucks and McDonald's. If you put Starbucks and McDonald's on one side, Subway is like just underneath it. Doesn't beat them, but just underneath
it. The biggest franchise, right, out of all of them?
Yeah, Subway or McDonald's?
Unless it's changed in the last 2 years, they were the biggest franchise for a long time.
Wow. For a while.
All right. All right, guys. Our guest is ready to go. His name's Mark Montoya. He's the coach over there at Factory X. His name's been popping up a lot on our show lately. So I told the coach, we'd love to have you back and talk about some of these fighters and these fights. Hello, Coach Mark Montoya. How you doing? Good to have you back on MMA Junkie Radio.
I'm great, guys. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Good, good. Well, you know, like when we talked to you, after it was part of the season of Tough that was filming and you were coaching, we told you, hey, we'd love to have you back on because we just keep hearing your name over and over. A lot of people sing your praises. And so that's why we reached out, because everybody just loves, a lot of your fighters just really love the way that you've affected their lives, not just as a coach, as a mentor. And once you start hearing that a lot, we know that someone's doing something right. That together with wins and losses, and a lot of you guys are doing well. I'll start with Steven Seiler. I mean, this guy has had an incredible career resurgence, and now he's fighting for $1 million on December 31st. How crazy is that?
I know. How cool is that, man? I'm super proud of that kid. You know, I've known Seiler for a long time, and a funny story is I was actually at a fight. I believe it was for Titan FC back in the day, and I was there with another fighter, and I've known John Hackelman for a long time, and John Hackelman called me I believe it was the day of the fight, or it might have been the day of the weigh-in. I can't remember, but he called me and said, he goes, hey, coach, he's like, my flight has been canceled, and I'm not going to make it there in time for the fight. He said, could you corner Seiler for me? And I was like, are you serious? And he goes, yeah. And I go, what? Okay, sure. I said, yeah, no problem. I said, I'm here anyway. So I said, well, what's the game plan? And he goes, to win. And I go, well, no shit. I go, I know that. I said, I was like, is there anything specific that you want, you know, Hack? And he's like, yeah, to win. And I go, all right, done. So I went and found Seiler, and I said, hey, man, you know, Hack's not coming out, and his flights are canceled. And I ended up cornering Seiler, you know, out of the blue that time. But I've known him way before that when he was in the UFC and what have you. So when he reached out to me and said, hey, coach, I'd like to come out and do my camp with you. I'm in the PFL tournament. I was ecstatic to have him. And you know, he was a big underdog going into that tournament.
Yeah.
And, you know, he became the number one seed, and now we have an opportunity to go fight for $1 million, and that was the entire goal, is to obviously get that opportunity, and then the major goal is to win it. So it's cool to see that, and it's cool to see kids like Seiler that have a ton of talent, and you know, they come out and we get to help just change their lives and be a part of that journey. That's a cool deal. So really proud of him. But, yeah, he's a great example.
Yeah, and he shared with us that, you know, there's been a couple times where he's thought about hanging it up. And on this occasion, now that he's a father, the wife who's been supporting you know, one of the conditions was, hey, okay, go out there, do your thing. I'll hold down the fort, but I want you to really, really immerse yourself this whole summer, you know, the regular season fights and the playoff fights. And she allowed him to get away from all that, go to your gym and isolate. So you could tell that two parties were endorsing your camp, you as the coach, and, you know, their belief in your system. I think that's huge. The other guy was someone we spoke to recently, and that's Anthony Smith.
We had him on
the show. He's got Volkan Ozdemir coming up this weekend. Yeah. And same thing. He just says there's something about that gym, the culture of the gym, the coach, the camaraderie is really, really special. And, again, that's high praise. You know, that's another guy in another organization in a different situation, but, you know, yet again in a big fight.
Yeah, you know, Anthony is an incredible fighter. I've been watching him for years, and obviously he's not far from Denver. He's in the Omaha area, so I've seen him around, you know, just the regional scene bumping around, and then the Strikeforce days, and obviously his first stint in the UFC. And I've seen the incredible talent that he is, and, you know, that it's cool to have kids like Siler and Anthony. You know, we actually Siler and Court McGee have been longtime teammates, and Court McGee actually came out for his camp for this fight coming up. He's fighting on the same card as Anthony, and you know, again, I've known Court for a long time as well, and I'm looking forward to having both Anthony and Court in Canada on the UFC card this weekend, and just watch those kids, you know, really go out there and perform like I know they can. And you know, the biggest thing that you said is culture. You know, the day that I said, okay, I'm going to be a full-time coach, and when I looked at the game plan of how I was going to be a great coach and how to run a great business, to me it was all about culture. I wanted to build a culture that if I was somebody coming from the outside in, I'd want to be here. A part of it, and I also wanted it to be, you know, hard-nosed, that hungry, humble thing, and, you know, just surrounding myself with a bunch of iron to sharpen each other with. That, you know, in a quick nutshell, the culture has always been my number one goal, and I've had some really talented kids in here that don't fit the culture, and I've asked them, you know, to move on, because it's not about the talent, it's about, you know, talent, culture, the whole environment, and making it work. Because at the end of the day, man, I got to come here every day. So do these kids. And you don't want to go to work where you don't want to be around those people. That's going to suck. And so what's the point of that? So, you know, that was my take. And there's 100 ways to skin a cat, man, but that's mine, and it seems to be working.
Coach Mark Montoya is our guest here on MMA Junkie Radio on Twitter. He's at Coach M. Montoya. Let me turn it over to the co-host here. Goes, what do you have for Coach Mark Montoya?
Coach, the one thing that you have to decide, I think, when you become a head coach and do it full-time, the one thing that I see over and over is you'll see fighters, they have their fights, and then they can have their break. It doesn't seem like head coaches really have that much time to have breaks, because you always have somebody going, you always have to be a part of the gym. Have you been able to figure out a way to disconnect and get away, or as being a coach, is that basically going to be like a 15, 20-year long job that just never ends?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, there's a quote, and I think I'm paraphrasing, but it says, if you're going to start your own business, there is no such thing as balance. And I believe Robert Hershovic said that. He's one of the guys that's actually on Shark Tank, if you watch that. But, you know, what he said is true. And because we don't have a season in MMA, it's not like there's an off season. And even if there was an off season, I'd be doing stuff anyway. But I you know, it's to find a balance. I don't know. I don't think there's such a thing. I think, you know, I have to be obsessed with what I'm doing as a coach, and I also have to be obsessed with what, you know, my family. So the times that I have available when it's, you know, family time, I really try to stay engaged and, you know, not be distracted and be a part of that whole process, just like I do when I'm on the mat. You know, I'm not sitting there distracted when I'm coaching athletes. So guess if you call that a balance, that might be one. But at the end of the day, what you said is spot on. When they're done, I'm still going. You know, I have seven kids fighting this weekend. Obviously, not all in the UFC, but throughout the regional circuit and then the UFC. And you know, when they're done for a little bit. And then I have Chris Camozzi fighting next weekend in Glory in Madison Square Garden. So it's back on track for me. So, you know, but I love it, man. I mean, if you don't love this, what's the point of doing this? And I feel really blessed to be able to come and do something that I love on a daily basis. And a lot of people don't get to do that. So I feel blessed, man.
Yeah, and connecting the dots, guys. Remember last week we had Chris Gutierrez on the show? He was headlining the LFA card.
Yeah, yeah.
He got a win, and he's also with Coach Montoya. Yeah. All right, so let me turn it over to the fight analyst, Dan Tom. He's our other co-host. Dan, what do you have for the coach?
Hey, Coach. You know, you were low-key one of my favorite cornermen to watch. You know, I have to watch a lot of fight footage, and in turn, not only do I obviously appreciate the fighters, but you appreciate everybody in there doing their job, you know, whether the referee's doing a good job or not, or the cornermen. And I paid you this compliment before, you know, how you do so well at walking and guiding your fighters through the fire. But let me ask you on the other side of the coin that I don't really get to see, as far as the prep work inside the gym. Now, obviously, you talk to most fighters. Everybody's different. I would argue a majority of fighters don't like to watch tape on their opponent. But as a coach, obviously, you have to do a little bit of that tape watching, a lot of that preparation. So let me ask you about this in particular with Anthony Smith's matchup with Volkan Ozdemir. You know, how much of the process do you take with a guy like Anthony as far as game planning for Volkan? And not just Volkan, do you also, as a coach, do you have to take into account that Volkan, you know, where the opposing fighter is training at? You know, obviously, as I'm sure you know, some gyms have certain trends and tendencies. A bit of a long-winded question there, Coach, but tell me, as far as the prep side, what's your opinion? How do you go about that?
Yeah, you know, thanks for the compliment. I appreciate it. You know, it's a craft that will take a lifetime to hone in, and I continue to just practice and try to be great at it. So I appreciate the compliment. And then as far as the you know, the planning and how all that looks when it comes to a fighter, especially in particular with Anthony Smith, with this fight coming up. I always look at fights at the beginning the same way. So I look at, okay, if I am Ozdemir and I am his coach, how am I going to beat my athlete? How am I going to beat Anthony? So that's my first question. And so I start dissecting fighting from that side of it first, and then I watch a bunch of video and tape. I watch it throughout their entire camp, and just continue to watch and see and try to recognize patterns and or not, and positional stuff. And then, like you said, where they come from, are they doing specific things and such. So with all that said, guys like Anthony, he's not a big film watcher. He's not watching tape and on his opponents, but the second I get in there with him to start training, we're basically brushing up on all that. One, okay, here are some things we need to sharpen up with Anthony based on my assessment of, if I was the other side, how would I try to attack him? And then two, here's the game plan moving forward so that we can go and beat the opponent. So we're sharpening both edges of the sword. And to me, you know, without getting way specific, that's the key to how I've done it. And again, there's a bunch of ways to do it, but that's how I approach it.
Coach, wanted to ask you one last thing here. You have one of the coolest pics there on Twitter as far as for your profile. All those belts hanging in the gym. It's just a nice, solid shot of your gym. You got the cage there. You got the big Factory X. But all those belts, is that basically every championship that's ever been won, or are there still more out there? And if so, is that just the commitment that the athletes have made to do that?
Yeah, good question. So the belts that are on the wall are the titles that the athletes here have won. And, you know, they've so graciously, instead of hanging it on their wall at home, they've displayed their hard work in the gym. There's other belts that we don't have up, just we just haven't put up, not for any other reason than just being lazy and haven't put them up. But those are just their hard work and to show what they've gone out and accomplished. And whether it's, you know, a local belt or, you know, it's a major national belt, those are that's their accomplishments, and I'm proud of them. And to be honest with you, I just like belts. I mean, they look cool, and they're a cool accomplishment, and it's a trophy essentially. And for me, it's one of the markers of their success. So it gets displayed there so that they can look and see and feel, and all the new people and all the existing people can be a part of that, because it's not just the fighter that won the belt. It's the entire team, the staff, the coaching staff, and everyone involved. So, you know, I thought it was a cool idea to display all that.
It's awesome. I love it. All right, Coach, thank you so much for spending some time with us. We do have to wrap up. It's always great to catch up with you. Safe travels to Moncton, Canada this weekend, and we'd love to catch up with you again in the future.
Hey, guys, I appreciate everything you do, and thanks for having me on. Like I said last time, anytime you guys need something in the future, please reach out. I'd love to come back on, and look forward to getting a bunch of wins this weekend, and especially, too, with Court McGee and Anthony Smith in the UFC. So thanks again, fellas.
Okay, thank you, Coach. Bye-bye. There you have it. Coach Mark Montoya on Twitter, at Coach M. Montoya, and then you can see that picture. Right, guys? Kind of reminds you, like, of those professional teams that hang the banners.
And I dug it a lot.
That's really, really cool. All right, that's our show for today. I want to thank Coach Mark Montoya for his time and Steven Seiler for his time. We'll try and reroute Frank Mir to tomorrow or another show during this week. John Morgan will be back in studio tomorrow co-hosting. We'll see you then. For Danny and Dan and Goes, I'm George. Have a nice day. Go out there and be a champion. Viva Las Vegas. How I